Kabbalists say, the Bible is code. They, of course, mean, the Old Testament, the five books of Moses. If the Bible is code, then it is not a story. Or if there is a story there, it is itself code, meaning an illustration of a principle. Egypt stands for slavery. Slavery to whatever people are a slave to: riches, significance, sex, entertainment, desire to receive for the self alone, the racket with which they extort goodies from others, justify their nastiness, their domination, their haplessness. Extorting sympathy, or whatever they extort. So what did Moses do with this bunch of slaves? He made them march around in the desert for 40 years. None of the original slaves remained alive. One would think 40 years were enough. But no. Even the little ones were more concerned with what they didn't have, the sign of having a racket, than with the vision and the idea of the promised land. And then Moses, himself, wasn't allowed into Canaan. Or take the incident in the Bible of Moses going up the mountain to get the word of God, but it took too long for the people. So they built a golden calf, and started to worship it. Moses came down with the tablets he put the word of God, but found the people already turned away admiring the golden calf. He broke the tablets. This serves as a cautionary tale for the teacher whose students find other things to admire, want to follow, pine after. It's all in a day's work. Ahem. It is the fate of a leader who is ahead of their people to want heaven more for their people, whatever heaven is, than their people want heaven for themselves. So the story of Moses and the Israelites is a cautionary tale for any leader who wants to lead slaves to freedom. It tells the leader that slavery is in the genes, not in the memory of the people. Obviously, this is my interpretation, given that I can, with sources' help, that I have been able to manipulate your genes, open up capacities, adjust your predatory genes, create audios that talk directly to your genes. We are, in the playground, the program that is like the 40-year march in the desert was for Moses. We are on the last leg of the process. The elimination of the slavery genes. But it didn't work for Moses, did it? If we look at the story, it didn't quite turn out to be the fairy tale as it was supposed to, did it? If it had, the Bible would have stopped there. But it didn't. Why? Because the genes, the altered genes, left alone, without new stuff to learn, the genes turned back to how they were before. My favorite non-Bible-based story to illustrate how this works is this. You decide to get new furniture for your living room and your dining room. You drag the old furniture to the curb for the trash collectors, and you feel really great about it. New furniture, new year, new life. But when evening rolls around, you want to sit down and eat your dinner, so you sneak out to the curb and bring in the chairs and the dinner table. And then you want to watch television, so you bring in the sofa and the armchairs. And you end up where you were, maybe a little tired. So unless the new furniture is delivered even before the old is discarded, you'll end up not needing it. This is a job of inspiration. Of being able to get excited from seeing a future for yourself using the new furniture, using the new spiritual capacities, being productive, being kind, being considerate, giving importance to others, giving importance to life instead of stealing it. But how do you do it? Motivational speakers, the vision board masters, the mind moving nuts, are masterful at this part of the story. And wholly and completely incompetent, not even interested in taking the old furniture out to the curb. They lay it on thick with the dream, the fantasy, the imagination, leading people to experience and love the future they cannot create with the genes they have, other than in their minds. Result, the infamous desire trap. It is all laid out, this is where this new furniture goes. And this is how we'll enjoy watching television. But no new furniture, just the idea. The old furniture is still there. The mind is a funny thing, it makes what it envisions more important and more real than reality. And therefore, desire trap people never make the effort to bring their desire into reality. The world of slavery, the world we live in, has 1001 ways to keep you in bondage, tethered to the impotent desires, caged in the desire trap. I have one student whose biggest contribution to this work we do is his unparalleled tendency to fall into the desire trap and climb out of it. The story, by Portia Nelson, they teach in all the 12-step programs, is a great illustration of how this goes. Autobiography in 5 short chapters. 1. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. 2. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I still don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I am in the same place. It isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. 3. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there, I still fall in. It's habit. It's my fault. I know where I am. I get out immediately. 4. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. 5. I walk down a different street. Copyright 1977 Portia Nelson. There's a hole in my sidewalk. The romance of self-discovery. Whether you know it or not, that story is about you. And you are most likely in chapter 1 of that story. You live in that hole in the sidewalk, and you have wallpapered it. You have made it your home. My students in the playground live in different chapters. Some, the student I have mentioned before, is in chapter 3, ready to move to chapter 4. But the big question is, what about chapter 6? What will be your life about? What is the future that makes it worthwhile to be walking free and unrestrained, without your favorite hole in a sidewalk? Is that future inspiring enough for you to work towards it? Make that future your new home? I have been getting my people ready for this step for a month now. The webinar I promised to the buyers of the 53 Invisibles course, back in the beginning of December, was a webinar workshop where we would do two things. 1. Completely see the racket, the ugliness of what you are doing in life, your dark side. 2. Activate the DNA capacity of seeing value. Without seeing value on all three levels, you won't be able to create a future you can stick with. And you will drag the old furniture, the racket, back into your house. 3. And maybe, with that new capacity still active, we'll attempt to create some kind of future. A new you doesn't need the old furniture anymore. I am going to republish those articles, one a day. Read them. They are going to prepare you for the webinar. The webinar is only for people who bought the 53 Invisibles course. If it is necessary, we'll do more than one webinar. By the way, participating in the What's the Truth About You? What's Missing free workshop is a great preparation for this new webinar. In fact, I'll make it mandatory. That's a thought.